gives you something like Mia's. And if you go well, if you divide by c squared there, then that gives us Mia squared, and we want a square root in there. So that's, I mean, that's one way of doing it. So, and then what we've been doing, I think Michael and Jim haven't really talked about, but it's incredibly so it's incredibly powerful technique. Dimensional analysis. And it's really just from knowing what the dimensions of the length that you're looking for, whatever units. We're actually figuring out, kind of getting a great rough idea of things. It's a very, very powerful, true tool, but it's incredibly useful. And so the planning length is incredibly important. So important, in fact, that we even want to put it on a t-shirt. Idea. Maybe not. And so what is that is the scale of quantum gravity. And so it's tiny, it's unimaginably tiny. So if you think of something like superstring theory, the strings in that are of this length, the Planck length. So really it's round about 10 to the minus 35 meters. And it's so small, it's kind of, you think, well, that's a small number, but it's not, it's really small. So an atom, 10 to the minus 10 meters, the nucleus of an atom, 10 to the minus 15 meters, so it's 20 orders of magnitude smaller than nucleus. It's phenomenally tiny. There's just no way we can directly probe that. Yes?
How come it's so small?
I doubt, well, how it's so small? Yeah, it's a very good question. That's a very deep question. I guess that's, ultimately, that's set by the scales of quantum physics and by the scales of general relativity. So I guess that's ultimately set by the scale of quantum physics and the units that are involved. So once you accept those, then that dictates what the scale of quantum physics will be. It's not sort of intuitive why you should get something on the macroscope scale in general relativity, and why something on the atomic scale wouldn't lead to that. That's what you do. Yes, you have a question?
Yeah. No, question is it ever possible in the future that something of that scale could be experimental, and you say,
yeah.
But in principle, can you do it?
So, yeah, in principle, can. So, actually, I'll go through that. That's an excellent question. I'll go through this. So, there are some people talking about experiments in, I think it's a satellite called. So, people are actually. So, if you did it just directly with a particle, like satellite, brute force, people have figured out you would need one that would go beyond the solar system and back, which is obviously not very practical. There's a satellite which will be launched, I think, by the European Space Agency, and I believe it's 2007, called GLAST. I'm not sure what that stands for. But that, what that will look is at light from very, very distant sources, maybe quasars or something, way on the other side of the universe, that have been traveling for sort of billions and billions of years, until it reaches us here on Earth, or I guess the satellite out just beyond the surface of the Earth. I guess that's
a bit
sad. Hey, my other career, if I didn't become a physicist, was going to be an artist. Okay, and so that would be, I think it's around about 2007, so next year. And according to one theory of quantum gravity, space is actually discrete, and so it's not continually, so there's actually sort of, it's only defined down to actually the Planck length, down to, space kind of goes in jumps, 10 to the minus 35. Meters in length, and for some reason that will actually make space a dispersive medium. So light of different frequencies will travel at slightly different speeds according to this theory of quantum gravity. And this effect can be magnified for light traveling over a longer distance, over sort of this is billions of light years. And so that would mean we'll actually see a thing light, but I think it's maybe higher frequencies or lower frequencies. I forget which one slightly before we see light, or say lower frequencies or different frequencies. So we'll actually disperse the speed, and that will in some distinctive way that they're actually hoping to test with this class satellite. And so there, that's kind of a subtle thing, in a sense, using the vast distance of space, in a sense, to vastly magnify the effect that occurs at the Planck scale. So there are all sorts of clever experiments people are thinking of now. And I think, I mean, Mike talked about this being a very exciting time, and I think it is. It's just an amazing thing, especially some of the experiments people are doing. Michael will talk about those gravity wave detectors. They're just about to build the most expensive, largest piece of scientific equipment in human history. They're actually putting it now in CERN. Has anyone heard of the galaxy? Yep. So that stands for... Hadron Collider. That's due to go online.
Very good.
Okay, what would you call it? So it's costing about $8 billion due to go online next year. We actually, there are some scientists at this institute that are not actually working on the experiment, but definitely very much working on the theory for that. That will be very exciting. That will probe energies higher than ever before seen in human history directly here on Earth, up, and so that'll be very, very exciting. So we're going to answer your question. Directly, in principle, you could see it down to the fine plane. Practically, no, but people are thinking all sorts of clever ways of doing that. Was there a... Yes?
You mentioned before, when you try to combine quantum theory and generality, it collapses when you come at, like, it just sort of collapses at that.
Yes, but there's
so,
a...
Does that mean before your deployment, it's you still can apply general relativity and it still works?
Good question. And to varying degrees, yes, you can. And people talk about that. This technical term is an effective theory. And down to at least, so if we down to at least, I think it's about 10^-17 meters. They have what they call effective theories, and there's these kind of theories. They're kind of approximate theories that people have with quantum gravity that work down to that scale. But if you're an engineer, then you know engineers, they don't care about understanding anything. They just want to build things and build bridges. And so, but I know that you're not interested in doing that. You really want to understand at a deep level. And if you want to do that, you need a deep, real theory of quantum gravity. If you want to understand what's going on at, say, the center of a black hole, where you get a really small distance, you know, in a singularity, but you get a large amount of mass, so that quantum physics and gravity are important, you need a fundamental theory of quantum gravity to really understand that. So, so that's a good question. So there are approximate theories, but we know they're not fundamental, effective theories. So that's the Planck length. And to actually probe that experimentally, so... to probe that, we'd need some sort of wave or some sort of object that had a wavelength round about of the order of that. And so we need a wavelength lambda down about 10^-35 meters. And using the wave equation, C equals F lambda, where C is the speed of the wave speed, which in this case is the speed of light. This is frequency, and lambda is wavelength. Frequency equals C divided by lambda. So if we just want to get a rough value, we'll forget about the 3, because, I mean, who cares about a factor of 3? So the speed of light is roughly 10^8. In standard units, and then we'll forget about the factor of 4 because it doesn't really matter. Yeah, approximately. Yeah, good. So we have 10 from minus 35. So this gives us 10 to the 43 hertz. This is an idea of the corresponding wavelength of electromagnetic radiation we would need to probe that scale. But there's something also a very important formula you may, actually relates, so that's kind of frequency actually relates frequency to energy. But if you have a wave, like a light wave, electromagnetic radiation of that frequency, it's very simple to find how much energy that has, or how much energy, I guess, a photon or a particle of light that frequency has. And that formula is E equals HF. And so one way of looking at light is to think of it as being about tiny clumps or particles of energy, so photons, particle theory of light. So that light coming out of all of the lamps up here is just particles or photons. And they have a particle-like aspect and a wave-like aspect also, so they have a frequency. And this is a formula. This is actually this is Einstein's formula for actually relating the frequency of the photon to the energy. So we just multiply it by Planck's constant. So the energy, you can only get an approximate value. So we'll forget about 6.63 because we're just including the order of magnitude. So we have 10 to the minus 34 joule seconds for H, and then 10 to the 43 for the frequency hertz. So just adding up the exponents, that gives us 10 to the 9 joules, roughly. So that's a gigajoule. So I mean, that's a lot in some context, because if you think about each of these lamps here, would be producing something like 60 joules every single second. So that's a lot, but if you want to actually sort of probe the Planck scale directly, you need to have every single photon or every single sort of particle you have having that energy. And that's for a fundamental subatomic elementary particle to have that much energy. That is just phenomenal. That's basically, so the biggest accelerator, the accelerators that's about to go at CERN, the Large Hadron Collider, that will go up to, it's actually around about, 14 tera electron volts, which is, so it's 14 by one tera, so it's a kilo is 10 to the 3, mega is 10 to the 6, giga is 10 to the 9, tera is 10 to the 12, a terabit. So that's 14 by 10 to the 12 electron volts, and so one electron volt equals roughly 10 to the minus 19 joules. So if you actually can figure out what energy that corresponds to in joules, so I guess roughly that'll be, make that, let's see, 10 to 13, so it's about 10 to the minus 6 joules, roughly. So it's just, that's approximately equal to 10 to the 13.
So it's a loop around the Earth.
Sorry?
Loop the collider around the Earth.
Great, if you can do that, just, yeah. So 10 to the minus 6, 10 to the 9, a little bit of a difference between the two. So what that means is directly probing the Planck scale, we are, so let me see, so that's 15 orders of magnitude off. So that we have to multiply the energies of our particles are at by 10, 15 times over to probe that. So some people, so the thing is, finding a quantum theory of gravity or a theory of everything is incredibly hard. And this hopefully gives you one idea why it's incredibly hard. It's just phenomenally high energies we're dealing with. Unless you can think of some clever way like this class experiment. So to give you an idea how, I mentioned last night Einstein spending the last 30 years of his life. Did I mention that?
No,
okay. So Einstein spent the last 30 years of his life not working on this, because back then they didn't know about the true nuclear force, the strong and the weak, at least when he started working on it. So he was trying to unify electricity, electromagnetism, and gravity. So just trying to unify two forces. Spent essentially the last 30 years of his life doing that, and he failed. So it's kind of weird, but the last 30 years of Einstein's life were in some very real sense a failure. So, I mean, people have looked at his notebooks and the papers he published, and it just none of the ideas really work out at all. But it was just a really, really tough problem. And you know, a lot of people are working on this. String theory is one. But the problem with that is, the one issue with that today is you can do this amazing and complicated defense in mathematics, and it's incredibly hard to force. So ultimately, you want to test it. This is Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics. Physics is the study of the real world. And just the difference between this number here and this number here, kind of hopefully gives you just some sense of just how far away we are from probing really the theory of a scale of quantum gravity. So what it means is, so directly we're probably not going to get there. So what we need other young physicists to come up with smart, clever ideas like this last experiment for indirectly probing that. So hopefully that's kind of giving you an idea. So you derive from me, this is something that you got for the Planck scale. Really what seems to be the smallest possible length, at least in superstring theory, of any material object. And that's kind of the scale of quantum gravity by dimensional analysis. So what we're going to start with the end, so it was a bit weird. So now that we've got quantum gravity, we're going to go backwards and actually start studying quantum physics, and general relativity, and in the end we're actually going to look at putting them together to get more about this idea of the Planck scale. But before we do that, we need to understand a little bit of the language of quantum physics, a little bit of the language of general relativity. And that language is the language of mathematics. So what we're going to reduce is take sort of a deep breath, and we're just going to go through some few things just to refresh your mind. So we have a lot of people at different levels of understanding. So Michael is going to come up now. We'll take you through just a review, a little bit of review of notation and so forth, and some basic ideas just to get you all started. So some of you, this is new to you, that's fine. If you do know it, then that's also fine. That's a bonus. But I'll hand over to Michael now. And then we'll probably take a little bit, so after this we'll give you a bit of fresh air and take a little bit of a tour of the building.
All right, guys. Take a deep breath.
This is the fun stuff.
That other stuff is fun stuff.
This is like fun as in non-intellectual. We're just going to
stretch the mind a bit.
The next day, we're spending a lot of time with calculus. And we're going to see where people are and take you either to the beginning, or some people are already at the end, and we'll just push you even further. One of the things that I've spent some time, probably 40 minutes, is just certain mathematical concepts. Like Damien said, most of you may already know this. There may be one or two where the notation from this country is a bit different. So all I'm just going to go do is go through this stuff. We'll make sure that we block it. Now, it's the first time. Start on the t-shirt. I'm mentioning it here to block it. Now, you know what I'm talking about? The one that just Damien showed at the beginning? Just block it. I'll explain where that came from, because it was kind of unique. I told the other group about the story. When I was about your age, many, many, many decades ago, there was no such thing as the internet, right? No, I know this is scary. So we had to do this thing. It's an analog process called writing. It was amazing. You took a utensil or something like this and you rolled it up and down and left a residual trail onto your head. And believe it or not, people could actually put it into a rectangular piece of paper and pay 5 cents and put it there, and you put some sort of location identifier and you put it in this box, and some guy would actually pick it up and deliver it to somebody else who could read this scribbling. It was amazing, right? Well, I wrote to a a science fiction author. You guys all love science. You wouldn't be here if you didn't, except one guy likes English. love science fiction. How many people here like science fiction? Raise your hands. So I would sit there easy say there's more than 50%, probably looking for 70% of the people, like science fiction. Well, I grew up liking science fiction. And there was a specific author, and I read his books when I was about 12, 13, 14, and I wrote him. He wrote back. Now, this is amazing. You know, you sit there and you say you write to somebody, somebody who produces a book, and they actually wrote back. We became kind of like pen pals until he died. So about every 2 years or so, he would write back just wanting to know how was my life going, things like that. His name was Robert Heinlein. Yes, but some people who don't know this author, right? Stranger in a Strange Land. Those of you who know the book, or know the phrase, grok. That's the way he sent to me. He says, okay, to grok something means that you understand it to your level, that you're not afraid of using it. That's all. You understand it to your level, that you're not afraid to use it. Now, I bet most of you grok addition. I say 7 plus 2, right? Your mind is going, and you're all sitting there going, you can do it. Some of you can do it here. Some of you can pick up this thing and pull it out. But you're not sitting there going, oh, no, an addition. You grok addition, right? You're not afraid to use it, right? If you're sitting there in line or on the TV show Jeopardy, and some guy says 7 plus 2, you're not going to sit there and go, oh no, I don't want to do this, I can't handle this. You rock it. You're comfortable. You're not afraid of using it. I could sit there and say, how many people rock all the periodic elements? Maybe one or two people that may sit there and say, now, just by me mentioning the periodic elements, you've rocked that at different levels. You're not afraid to pick up a chart and sit there and say, okay, I don't analyze them, but I know where to find the information about them. I can read them and I can sit there and say, see, I don't see me, but I can go to another book and figure it all out. I'm not afraid. Now, if you're a chemist, you probably memorize, you know more about it. So in all the secondaries that I teach, I want people to grok the subject. I don't want them to memorize it, right? My wife had a baby 3 days ago. So I was a brand new dad, right? I had to grok that process. And that is quite a process. Now, I'm not going to memorize every little thing. No, I have no problem memorizing my own name, where I live, things like that. But that's it. I want you to enjoy what we're doing. So as I put this stuff, I'm going to ask you every now and then, do you grok it?
Yeah.
Right? Do you feel comfortable with it? Right? You're not afraid of it. So the math that I'm putting on it is it shouldn't be difficult. But if it is, don't worry about it. Work on it to your grok. Right? You're going to, by tomorrow, you'll grok calculus. Some of you have already grok calculus. Some of you grok differential calculus. I was walking around, I saw some Dell operators. I don't know what they meant, but I saw some Dell operators dealing with some very interesting calculus stuff. Right? Some people understand derivatives, some people understand integrals, some people understand partial derivatives, right? Some people even understand some intense stuff when we're dealing with calculus. Fantastic. Just not be afraid to use it. You're all with me? You're back. All right, let's see what we've got now. I've got only a couple of topics. This is really easy. Tomorrow I'll be talking with about half of you, going to split the caps group into two groups. And I'll take you on I'll take you on a beginning journey with calculus so that you can drop calculus and be able to do some cool, fun math stuff. Because math is the language of physics. Right? It's a tool. And if it's a tool, don't be afraid to use it. Rock the tool, right? There are other people who can do it better than we can. Just ask them. Right? That's right. And if I've got a problem, I'm not silly. I'm going to find somebody who can do math better than I can. Right. Let them plug into a computer. Right? Let them pick up the answer. But for us, a nifty little thing. We want to rock just the basics here. So let's take you on a bit of a journey. Like I said, help each other out. Shouldn't be too much difficult stuff to do tonight. We last group, we did calculus first, and they were all shivering when they got back, and they were all talking about how scary this was, and they didn't know this stuff. So some people have not seen the notation, so we're making today a bit easier. Funny, right? So that you start the calculus next time. So everybody kind of knows the notation. So a couple topic areas I want to talk about. First thing. Hopefully everybody, maybe not, but don't worry about it, you'll rock it after I'm done. Function notation. How many people have never seen function notation? There's Marianne. Never seen it. Okay, well, I'm gonna rock it. That's the idea. So all I'm gonna do, there'll be certain things that I want everybody by the end of this to be in the same level. Alright, hey. Notice the gravitational arc that's happening here. There's a lot of mass in that corner. Functional thing. We've all seen an equation. Let me write an equation. Y equals 2x plus 4. F equals ma. Beautiful equations. Good equations. It's called an equation because it's got an equal sign. That's the point of that, right? That's how you like this stuff. So one side equals the other. But this is dudes and dudettes. Now, I use the word dude, which means both male and female. So when I say dude, you're a dude, you're a dude, everybody's a dude, okay? There we go. All right. So, we want to represent a way of writing an equation, but we want to do more with it. Math people are happy with this. You notice math people love keeping y's and x's. They just love y's and x's, right? You go to math class, what they use y's and x's, right? Physics guys love more style. We love using variables. We want to do more of it. So one of the things we want to do is we like using functional notation. Now, all functional notation is a way of reminding us, because we're not good strong math students, right? How this thing is going to work. So rather than writing y equals 2x plus 4, we would write it as f of x equals 2x plus 4. Now it seems strange because physics guys like to be lazy and then I'm making us write more. Well, sometimes it's better to write more because you do more lazy stuff out of it later on. So all this says, it says the name of my function is f. Why did I choose f? Because it's a function. Remember that C. I could choose W's, I could choose T's, but you know what? F is nice, that's easy to say to remembering. And then, just in case I get lost in thought, I'm going to say it's in terms of X. Just in case you got it. It's over here. The advantage of this is I can impress my friends and I can calculate F of 3. F of 3 just says, take the 3 and substitute the dude into here. So it goes, okay, wherever I see an x, I put a 3. Oh! And since I brought math in addition, there it is. Right? Yeah, is that right? So, I could have done the same thing and say, okay, dude, find the y value when x is 3. Same thing. Exactly the same thing. So let's do some fun little questions. Let's just do some exercise. And that's all functional notation is. I can use any letter, anything. I can rewrite this as W of P equals 2P plus 4. It doesn't matter what we're using. And we try to use letters that match what's working. So let me put it. Here's some examples for you to work on. I'll put the question, and I want you to write these things down, and then we'll all understand, we'll all graph functional notation. Here's my base function, f of s equals. You calculate this. You can ask me a long question too.
Why do you write your s like an s to line?
Because that's my f. You know, some people write their S like that. Yeah. Some people write their S like that. Mine's like that. Different.
Okay. Maybe it's something special.
I'm Indian. I'm not a cow, by the way. Hey, we can do anything with Mac. Cows. And that's why I was laughing, because I didn't see which t-shirt they chose. And my wife broke out laughing, because at the back, all of a sudden, there was a cow square. And there was somebody else in there, some other guy there, because I'll do another little talk on something else later on. And I like using characters, so. So what are they? Here's my function. This just checks if he's rocking. Here's my function. F of 3, F of pi, F of cow, and this one. F, and I'm putting inside F another function. See how the level jumped up. This is what we can actually put functions inside functions. So if we can do this, we've got one function that represents a set of mathematics of other functions. And therefore, I just have to, rather than me do the right side, which is complicated, I just write this the left side. I figured whoever's reading can do all the math. So, spend a couple minutes. I'll give you 1 minute. Easy stuff. Now, give me an exact answer for this.
Oh, exactly.
So 3.14159 is
2 pi squared.
And that's the exact answer. Yes. Yes. Yeah. What should you do in decimals? You know, unless the decimal is like 7 or 6.4, that's the exact answer. Pi is what we call a transcendental number. One of them keeps going and going, and like the energized bunny. Look at you in Canada or United States, you see that on commercials. So you'll see function notation used every now and then. Some of you rock it already. Fantastic. That's all I care about. Oh, mostly, all hands something like this. Now, anybody get 20? Me too, that's good. Just being able to do math. You don't make arithmetic mistakes. Everybody makes arithmetic mistakes. Your teacher should not take more, if you have to come and see me, they should not take more than 1 mark of a 10-mark question for arithmetic mistakes. Everybody makes arithmetic mistakes. Einstein makes arithmetic mistakes. It's human nature. Grok the process to understand how to do it. That's more important than plugging a number right here in your calculator. We'll all make mistakes like that. We'll all double check to catch up. All right. How about this BC? 2 pi squared plus pi minus 1. Done. I can even have a cow. Let's see now. 2 cow. We've got 4 legs, right? Oh, cool. Cow squared plus cow. 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know if cows have tails. They do have tails. So minus 1. Anyway, that's it. All right. Let's put a function inside a function. 2 bracket. Whatever they give me, I'm just putting it right in my machine. Where is it? Then it says plus itself again. 3x squared minus 1. You see, everything I put in did the same thing. Put the cow, 2 times cow squared. Put the function, 2 times function squared. Plus the cow, therefore plus the function, minus 1. And you guys can expand that out. I don't have to worry about it. Expanding it out is just algebra. You guys, anybody expand it all out?
Yeah.
All right, tell me what it is.
One at a time, one person, who, somebody in the hangman who's got it. So I was thinking about four versions of the same thing. Okay. Who's got it? Young man, 18, tell me.
18 x to the 4 cube minus 12 x squared minus 2.
Minus?
Plus 2.
Plus 2? Verification.
It's
nice. Man, it's like a democracy. Okay, put yourself. Okay. Is it
9? No.
18?
Minus 9.
That's a 9.
You're taking 9x squared out.
That's it. Plus.
So the one canceled itself out.
You're taking 9x squared out of that.
You can take it again. Perfect. Right? And the process is neat. Drop the process. The rest of it is just arithmetic, and we can all agree. And sometimes, like I said, we all make mistakes. Don't worry about it. We help each other out. That's what we're here for. Right? We test something out. Einstein made mistakes all the time. All the time. Stephen Hawking makes mistakes all the time. Myself, So, you guys graph functions? Functional notation?
Yes. That's the spirit.
All right. Degrees and radians. Yeah. All right. Same idea. Everybody heard of degrees. Anybody not hear of degrees? Okay. Radians. Anybody not hear of radians? So you guys all know radians. So I can go through this so fast as I know. All right, so please correct me if I make mistakes then. We drop this stuff. Here we go. There we go. I've just drawn a circle on the setup.
That's a small y.
There we go. Be proud of your y's. Okay. Drawn a circle on a set of Cartesian coordinates. It's a fancy way of saying I've drawn on a board. My circle has an arm inside, and the arm makes an angle called, in this case, theta. And we just like using Greek letters because everybody else can use normal identical Arabic letters, A through Z. So we'll just jump in the Greek side just to impress our friends and neighbors. The sounds and looks even cooler instead of being British. So I've got this point right over here who has a set of coordinates x, y. I'm an x, y grid. And I want to talk about this point. And I have many ways of doing it. I can give it a set of numbers, x and y. Or I can sit there and say, it is so many units away from me, and I'm making myself the center of the universe. So it's so many units away from me at a specific angle. So if I'm going to talk about where that clock is from me, I may say it's like 5 meters away from me at an angle of maybe 40 degrees. Now, if I just said 5 meters away from me, what would it create? Basically a circle, or if you think in three dimensions, it would be a whole sphere, right? So I can refer to something, and since we're talking about two dimensions here, it's one little piece, it's kind of neat. So I can refer to that location of that clock by saying how far it's away, because it would create a circle, but then if I give you a specific angle, it pinpoints the exact location of that point. Or I could give you x and y. And you may say, well, why the difference? You'll see that because we talked about the problem being on a sphere, it's a lot easier for us to use angles to point to something because we're more interested in things falling into the sphere. It's boring things they say in order. You want to see. When I said talk about a black hole, and I said, well, the signal is a black hole, people go, huh. But if I say, hey, look at how this thing falls into the black hole, people go, yeah, man, the guy's going in. This is pretty cool. Right? So, we don't. It's a
following the lines, coming in. It's kind of neat. So, different ways of referring to that. Well, one of the ways that we like to do it is using trig. Trig is another one of our tools. So, there are three primary trig ratios. Can somebody give me one of them?
Sine.
What's my sine? I think secretary. Sine of theta. Now, what's that equal to when you're in school? What did you teach you to tell you? Opposite over hypotenuse. I don't know what O over H because I can't spell either. Okay. Opposite over hypotenuse. So, in terms of this, it creates another right angle triangle. That's nice. Trig is always about right angle triangles. Here's my angle. This is the side opposite my angle. This is my opposite. There it is, both are opposite. My hypotenuse is always the longest side. And the other dude, because it's already left out, is the Canadian variable, the A. So that's the adjacent. Okay? So the side of my angle is just the ratio of opposite over hypotenuse. If you were ever on a desert island and you were to figure out what the sine of 30 degrees, because there's nothing else to do, you draw a circle in the ground. You bring out a stick that measures what you want to call your unit. You just measure how many sticks over here, how many sticks over there. You do the division, because there's nothing else to do. And you actually go to as many decimal places as you want. You figure out the sine of 30 degrees, or 42 degrees, or 19 degrees, or whatever number of degrees that you need. Some poor guy had to do this at the beginning. He didn't have calculators. It's hard to believe. We had books. We had calculators on a stick called slide rule. So, sine. It's just opposite over hypotenuse. And neat. What was over? Give me another one.
Cosine.
Okay. What's cosine equal to?
Adjacent
over hypotenuse. And the last dude left out that we worry about is? Tangent. And what's that going to be? Right. I think you have a French phrase that you remember that from. I used to tell my guys the Klingon war cry. I love Star Trek. Klingons. If I was a Klingon, they'd yell at me, "Stop the toy." Then I'd be ready to. Sign O A. Stop the toy. Stop the toy. There you go. Next way of remembering. Okay? It's all got to go up. Yeah. Now, thing about trig, if it was always this easy, nobody had much problem. There's a sign thing that always happens. Yeah, your calculator only gives the answer, one of the answers. Sometimes on a circle it's actually two, but really there's an infinite number of answers because you can go around the circle as many times as you want. But if you just look at where you are in your circle, you'll remember which side is positive, which side is negative. When I'm over here, my x and y, my they're both what? Positive? So if I'm dividing these guys, my hypotenuse is always positive. It's a language, right? So I'm always positive, right? Over here, right? My points over here, this thing is always, the sign is always positive. But when I'm down over here, my opposite is negative something, right? So it's negative. Over here, it's also negative. My cosine, and on this side, my cosine is like my x value. It's always positive. And on this side, it's always negative. And the only one that's tricky is this guy, which has got the opposites and adjacents. But I remember my kindergarten math, and negative divided by a negative is a positive. There we go. And positive divided by positive is also positive. Negative divided by positive is a negative. That's all I have to remember. So you can use that just to guide you which guy is positive, which guy is negative. Just remember where you are by looking at this circle. Now, this distance here, does anybody know what the length of that distance is?
Cosine.
Close, you're on the right track. It's H times my cosine. Perfect. Off my angle. Perfect. H is always going to be there. So H times my cosine. Just think of car travels horizontal. C for car, C for cosine. This distance here is going to be H times the
sine, and just think of sky is up, so potentially remember sky is up, that works. So if you somebody gives you the radius, somebody gives you the angle, you can actually determine this length by using this, or this length by using this formula. Those are neat little things to have. Yeah, h times that, and if it's boring, if h is 1, you're in a circle, it's cosine. That means sometimes this point is referred to as the cosine theta. That's all that is. So that's Cartesian. Polar coordinates. All I have to do in polar coordinates is just give you h and the angle. So you can actually use polar coordinates and Cartesian to go back and forth. So you'll see this using polar coordinates quite often. All it means is I'm going to give you the angle, and I'm going to give you the r value, the h value. So if I say my angle is 300 degrees, right, that means you're someplace over here, and I got to tell you how far it is, and that tells you exactly where it is. And if you want to figure out this coordinate, you can use these little guys to figure out the x value or the y value of the coordinate, if you want to go back and forth. And you kind of got that one. That was a bit harder. Can you kind of agree on that?
Yeah.
So polar coordinates, Cartesian coordinates, pretty neat. Now, we will use, there's an advantage using polar coordinates. I'll just show you one of the advantages and where I will be using it. You can be using, I'm going to tie this thing with radians as well at the same time. So two birds with one stone, which is kind of a nasty statement to say. All right. Radian. I mentioned here degrees, but what's a radian? See, now it's silence. So every kind of rock's degrees, right? You know, 360 degrees in a circle.
That's easy. 2 pi radians.
2 pi radians. Okay? All it is, for some reason,
I know the reason, but I'm not going to bore you with it.
But there's some reason why we chose 2 pi. Right? I'll give you a bit of a hint in a second. All right, there's my circle again. Here goes yes, some people have kind of put two together. All right, so I'm going around my circle, and I'm saying 2 pi radians. That means you go around once. One of the things that we like to do, besides draw circles, is we like to measure circles. And one of the things I'm interested in is measuring the circumference of my circle. So we have a formula. What's the formula for the circumference of a circle? What's r?
Radius.
Where do you think this 2 pi came from?
The radius of 1.
It's right around. It said, create a radius of r length, and then make an angle right around. When you do that, you'll sketch a circle. That's your circumference. That's the formula for your circumference. 2 pi. You've been looking at radians since elementary school. You didn't realize it. 2 pi r. What's the advantage of this? Here's my formula. Here's my angle. I don't even have to go all the way around. I can create an arc on my circle. So what do you think my arc is going to be? My arc, something called arc length, is going to be, just remember, here it was 2 pi times r is r. So what do you think it's going to be?
Done.
That's just an angle. Theta times my r. Just like this was, here's my r. This was 2 pi around. My theta was 2 pi, so it's 2 pi r. Here, my angle is just theta. So if this was pi, it would be pi r. If it was pi over 2, it would be pi over 2 r. Right? If it was a cow, it would be cow r. It's just a measurement. Kind of neat, isn't that neat? Radians have a nice little advantage of that, because you can create this arc, and you have to figure out this arc. Now, imagine how much more difficult. We'll do it in degrees. If I say, give me the arc length drawn by a circle of radius 5, which has 17.2 degree angle, and you'll be sitting
there.
You have to sit there and say, okay, now I've got to do 2, 3, and 6, 5, and all that. I have to find the ratio of
360 to 17.5. You can still do it. But if I say it's in radians, right? And I give you in terms of something really, really nice, I think you can really do some fun stuff. Because we love radians. Right? We really do. You'll see us using this quite often. Okay? So that's a nice advantage. You get some nice little arc length stuff out of that radians. You need to know two triangles. Two special triangles. Hopefully you've memorized these ones in elementary school or grade 9 or grade 10. Let me just remind you, if you do these ones, let me say now. Let me see. Bring my triangles. There's one of them. There's the other one. And I'm going to go 1, 1, root 2. To come back to you. If I do 1, and where's this one going to be? You got it. What's this one going to be?
Perfect.
Some of you have seen it before. Memorize it. No, put it on the sheet. What we call them if you need them. What? What is neat about this? What is this angle here and this angle here? So 45 degrees, 45 degrees. In radians, how much? Pi over 4. Pi over 4. Just remember, 2 pi is, if you ever lost, 2 pi equals 360 degrees. So, right? So if I divide, I want to figure out what 45 is. What do I divide this by? 45 and divide this by the same thing. So pi is like 180 degrees, pi over 2, pi over 2 equals 90 degrees, pi over 4, 45 degrees. And you can convert back and forth and it needs that. Well, because of this, you can get exact answers. You will be doing this with complex numbers later on, and you'll be doing this in quantum. We start dealing with probabilities and all kinds of angles. And this is not nice, because if I say, what is the sine of 45 degrees, you'll sit there and say, oh, I remember sine, I got it. Opposite over hypotenuse. I just think here's 45 degrees. Opposite is 1. Hypotenuse is? So the exact answer is 1 over root 2. You'll see that popping up. And some people will rationalize the denominator, write it different ways. That's good enough. 1 over root 2, or they could say, what's the sine of pi over 4? And you could also say it's 1 over root 2. And they can say, what's the cosine? And you just use adjacent over hypotenuse and say, oh, adjacent, it's also 1 over root 2. What's this angle in degrees?
30.
What's this angle in degrees? What's this angle in radians?
6.
What's this angle in radians? Perfect. So, if I say, give me the tangent of pi over 6, you'll sit there and say, oh, tangent is opposite over adjacent, and you will sit there and say pi over 6, it's going to be 1 over... There you go. Can I drop it? And you can plot every one of these things out. So later on, David will maybe do some probabilities. And he's going to say, and you'll have a little triangle happening. And you'll say, you'll start using, you may see this 1 over root 2. That just meant that he's calculated the length of the triangle. He must have said, this ratio for this ratio, and he'll use or utilize. These are where the numbers pop out. Okay? All comes from trig. And like I said, guys, I want you to drop. You're not going to drop it first time through. You've got your sheet, you've used it a couple of times. Ask your friends, you've got some nice tools to work through some of these things. It will make more sense. One last little piece. You want to see. What? You go too fast. What? I talked about a transcendental number. What number did I mention was transcendental?
Pi.
Makes you hungry, doesn't it? There's another one. E. What is E? A natural base. Base of what?
Log.
What's a log? It's a tree that falls on a tree.
Well, is it a number?
Yes.
Okay, give me the exact answer.
2.
It's a trick question. Okay, give me something. 2 points.
7 1 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2
So with that.
Yeah,
number 8. Yeah. Oh, so you tell me keep going into 8, to 8, to 8, to 8?
No, number 8.
Okay. Yeah, it's a number that seems to pop up in nature. It pops up, does pop up in general relativity, not as much as pi does. You'll see pi popping up quite often. But it does pop up in quantum mechanics, and you still use it as a tool. Right? Math is a tool. Some poor dude that figured this thing out had no clue what this thing was going to be used for. Does anybody know the defining formula for this?
One plus what?
The nth power. Okay, so if you want to impress your friends, you got a calculator. This just means make n as big as you can. Okay? In fact, you want to make n go to infinity, but since infinity is not a number, you can only go, that's why it doesn't end. You make n as big as you can in your calculator, and you say, let's assume that you get a $2 calculator store. You say, my n is like 100, and you go 1 plus 1 over 100, so that would be 1 plus 100, right? And you raise it to the power of 100, and your calculator will give you a value. Not quite that accurate, but it will give you something. The bigger you make n, the more accurate it is. There are a whole bunch of these things. Anybody know another version of calculating this? Anybody? What goes underneath the bottom? Somebody said it. N factorial. That's another way of defining calculating. Another way of basically. So you see what's happening here. And this is a fact. Remember I said math people are lazy? This is a lazy way of saying add 1 over 1 factorial plus 1 over 2 factorial plus 1 over plus 1 over plus 1 over. And you keep going and going until you get tired. Okay? Math dudes like to write this way, science dudes like to write this way, but then even sometimes this symbol is too long to write, or even use a shorter one.
What is it?
We just forget this thing altogether, and then we just say it's Einstein's summation notation, and then we don't know what it means. You'll get that error. How about this?
Zero.
What is I besides a variable? Yes, I is a complex number which we'll talk about later on.
It's weird.
It's like it forces you to use your imagination. Alright? This is probably one of the most beautiful equations that we have. It's called Euler's identity. Why is it one of the most beautiful equations? You've got every major number that you need to do mathematics in our number systems. You've got the two primary transcendental numbers, e and pi. You've got something called I, which allows you to go a whole new realm of complex numbers. Plus, it's got something which we call the multiplicative identity. This is a number, the one number in our number systems that if you multiply any number by that number, you get back the original number. 7 times 1 is
7.
That's what I mean. Get back a 7, 7. Multiply 1, get back a 7. Cow times 1 is
cow.
Yes. This is the additive identity. That means I take a number, I add the additive identity, I get back my number. Cal plus zero is still
got it.
And I need. Now this thing has some fancy stuff, and I'll leave that probably for Damien, but you have EDI with an angle. And it's going to pull out. Anybody know what goes here? Cosine of? What goes here? I sine of theta. This is going to be the link that allows us to write something either in Cartesian or in polar coordinates. This will be the link that we'll use going back and forth. Some people like visualizing it this way. And you'll see Damien talk about this when he does the complex number thing. That you can write it this way, or you can write it this way. And basically, Cartesian, right? Think of it like the X and the Y. But you can write it in polar, where there's my angle. And the number up front will be like my radius. That'll be one here, and polar. So you'll see him writing this. That's kind of neat, right? That's all it means. Fancy way of writing either in Cartesian or polar coordinates. So you have, and Damien will talk about this, so you don't have to rock it first time through. But I just want to make sure in the 30, 20 minutes or whatever I had that you guys rock functions. Right? Get a feeling of it. You're going to be doing some trade. Can I get a feeling of the sine, cosine, tangent? You'll see this E pop up. It is a number, not a variable, and it has some wonderful properties that make it pop up, and there's a way of using it. Kind of neat. And then we have gradients from ways of using arc vectors and measurements and things like that. Don't be afraid of it. Tomorrow we're going to take you on a bit more of a journey where we'll teach you all the years at university level calculus in about 2 hours, right? And it will be a blast. We'll be on it. Hope you guys had some fun. Is it Damien?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for that. We're going to have a bit of a change of pace now, and what we're going to do is I'm going to show you a little bit about the building. So you've seen the building. So what we're going to do is we're going to take you, first of all, we're going to go down that side, being incredibly quiet. And I should say, so there aren't very many people around that very quiet, but tomorrow there will be. So we need you to be respectful of those people, to be as quiet as possible while you're going upstairs in the morning and also downstairs in the evening. So we'll go down that side, and I mentioned there are 50, 60 researchers here working in areas. There are some working in quantum gravity, things like the Planck scale physics. Some working on quantum computers, some working on dark energy, dark matter. And these people, all of them, doing cutting edge research. So really research, they're all doing something that no one else on the planet has done before.